Hi, I'm Natalie Dale with GDOT, and we're back with Ahead of the Curve, Season 3, Episode 8. We are, I don't want to say we're celebrating an anniversary, but we are acknowledging the one-year anniversary of Hurricane Helene, a hurricane that brought months of devastation and work for GDOT. So we're going to talk to those people who were on the ground working during one of the biggest hurricanes to impact the state of Georgia. Hang tight. We'll be right back.
Hey, Metro Atlanta, do you know about our heroes? The Highway Emergency Response Operators, or HEROES, patrol Metro Atlanta interstates and respond to traffic-related incidents in the area. HEROES can also assist stranded motorists with flat tires, dead batteries, or in need of fuel or coolant. So if you find yourself stranded along one of Metro Atlanta's interstates or state routes, dial 511 on your phone and select option 1 to request HERO Motorist Assistance. This is a message from the Georgia Department of Transportation.
Welcome back. Again, we got a story of a hurricane, and we don't like to celebrate these anniversaries, and we hope we don't have a lot to talk about, but today we're talking about Hurricane Helene. 1 year later, we have two great guests, boots on the ground, who lived the days and months, almost a whole year of work from Georgia DOT to recover from this massive hurricane. So today we're talking with Matt Needham, Emergency Management Assistant Operations Coordinator. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We are glad that there is nothing, knock on wood, no weather events, it's sunny, in the state of Georgia today so that you could be with us. Because I know between hurricane season, winter weather, whatever else, the emergencies are plentiful. So we're glad you're joining us today. We also have Will Volk, who's our District 2 Communications Officer. Really got to, I don't want to say baptism by fire, but this was your big first weather event, right?
That's right. Less than 4 months in on the job, and we have, I'd argue, the worst hurricane that anyone in the Augusta area can remember in their lifetimes. It was just a major devastating impact.
So, Matt, walk us through, because we talk a lot about winter weather prep. We haven't talked that much about hurricane prep, but walk us through sort of how the state preps for hurricanes, because it is a moving target. Whereas winter weather, we can typically know the roads from point A to point B need to be treated. But hurricanes, up until even days, hours before, they can still be a moving target to where the impact for Georgia is going to be. So how did we prepare for this one?
Our office, of course, we have statewide hurricane plans that we update as needed. And those plans identify all of our critical routes and assignments for strike teams and things like that. During, you know, you can imagine during winter weather, typically the South Georgia teams might come up to Atlanta to help out. But, you know, during a hurricane, it's kind of the opposite effect. So we have a lot of our North Georgia crews that end up coming down. So we do dry runs every year. We just had our annual hurricane prep, statewide prep meeting a few months ago with all the different offices and districts to coordinate on any issues they have or needs for equipment and things like that. So it's a year-round thing, especially in emergency management. We're always testing and training and exercising for those events.
Give me an idea about equipment, because unlike winter weather where we're treating roads, you know, we don't really know what the impacts to the roads are going to be. There isn't a brine that can deflect a hurricane. What type of equipment do we prioritize when we expect impacts from hurricanes throughout the state?
Yeah, so a little similar to snow and ice. We use our 6-wheel dump trucks, 10-wheel dump trucks to haul debris instead of spreading salt. So we take the hoppers out and use those. But a lot of skid steers, loaders, anything with grapple hooks on it, those are the primary equipment, because we need to pick those trees and debris and logs up and be able to place them in the back of our truck. So that's really the main equipment.
Because our big issue during hurricanes is going to be trees, right? Trees on the roads, power lines. In some cases, I know in the coastal region, when we get, you know, we look at that map where we see where water is going to rise and there's going to be impacts to roads and bridges. So there can be impacts to roads from flooding. But for the most part, we're looking at tree and debris.
Yeah, that's right.
And to the point where that's on power lines, that's taking out signals. I know signals were a big deal, and we'll get there, but we talk about pre-staging, sort of in general. How far in advance are y'all comfortable saying, we need to pre-stage in this area?
Yeah, like you mentioned earlier, the track of the hurricane changes, you know, quite possibly every few hours up until the event. And so we don't want to stage our crews and then have it, you know, be hundreds of miles away. So, I mean, it gets down to 48 to 24 hours out before we really nail down a final decision on that. Now, some of the coastal districts, you know, if it's going to be a impact on the Atlantic coast, they might stage their crews, you know, that are located on the coast. They might stage them inland a little bit, Statesboro or Tifton or something like that, to make their crews safe. But yeah, it's typically 48 to 24 hours prior to landfall before crews are getting into their hotel rooms and their assigned locations.
And unlike a winter storm, and I'm going to keep sort of comparing this to a winter storm just because I think it's the two biggest weather things we deal with here. Unlike a winter storm, when you're staging, we have to be hypersensitive to impact areas and making sure that these crews are close enough to where they can respond once the storm's over, but far enough away to where they're not in danger. Whereas like a winter storm, we all live in the area where it's going to snow. But if we have certain expected impacts, we can't put crews down in the heart, the eye of the storm to wait it out. We really have to pull back, geographically speaking, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it does no good for our crews to be impacted because they're the ones that are responding to the event. So we don't want equipment to get damaged or crew members to get injured or anything like that. So we always stage them far enough inland so that they're able to respond. But you're correct. Just far enough out to where it's safe, but close enough that they can start the next morning and be close.
I don't envy y'all when y'all have to make these decisions about where and when people are going, because it's weather. It's Mother Nature. She is fickle and can change her mind. And so you're playing a working with GEMA, working with the meteorologist, working with other emergency agencies. Y'all are making an educated guess, but it's still a guess because it's weather, and weather, every storm is different. So I don't envy y'all when y'all have to make that choice. And so part of our role in strategic communications is to communicate with the public where we think it's coming, what's going to happen, what we're doing to prepare, and what we need other people to do. So, Will, that is your job in this case, as this storm is bearing down on District 2 and many parts of the state of Georgia. But, I mean, District 2, let's say, is not like the hurricane capital of Georgia. I mean, we're talking Savannah. We're talking even when they come up through the Gulf sometimes, you know, Nita gets them, Jill get them. This is not only your 4 months in on the job, but District 2 is not the first, you know, the first district that sees hurricanes. So how are you gearing up for this?
Yeah, so being where we are in East Central Georgia, we're used to seeing weakening tropical systems. And I mean, you would get wind, you would get rain, but not that major impact that you see in some of those areas closer to the coast. And that was kind of the expectation. You also talk about the shifting track. At first, it was looking like Helene was kind of going to take a path up I-75 and be more of a western to central Georgia impact. And then, like, as it was making landfall in real time, it shifts to the east, and all of a sudden, we're getting hurricane-force winds throughout the district. It was a major impact, and it kind of caught a lot of people off guard, just citizens around the area.
What are some of the standard hurricane messaging that you prioritize, you know, whether it's with power outages, signal, you know, how to treat a signal? Or with both of these, I know that both you and I, as well as Matt, we just really hope people just stay home. So when people are like, well, what are the messages for people? It's like, well, if they could just stay home, but really stay home, but they don't. And so what are some of the tiered messages you go through after that to make sure that if people do have to be out and about, that they're safe and that they understand what's going on?
Well, I just remember in the lead up to the storm, I was telling everybody, you know, treat a down signal like a four-way stop. Come to a complete stop. I was, you know, getting the message out about we have equipment staged, we're going to be ready to respond, but the impact that we saw, it was a major response, a lot bigger than what we were expecting.
And what happens, not specifically in this case, but Matt, what happens when we have a situation? So we're going to take Helene and sort of shelve her for 1 second, just because I want to talk about, because we get a lot of questions on Florida. When Florida evacuates and we have friends coming north, but Georgia is also expected. So in the case of Helene, but in the case of other hurricanes, we're going to get impacts too. We've got people coming up from Florida, so we're not just communicating with Georgians. How do we sort of account for any flow coming up from Florida during a hurricane that could be, you know, cutting across Florida, coming, and there was, I forget which one it was, that kind of went across Florida, then came up the coast. It's not just Georgians sometimes that we're communicating with. How do we sort of weigh that in with our messaging and with our planning?
Well, you know, Florida has an emergency manager just like we do in Georgia, and so we're in constant communication with her prior to landfall of a hurricane. We also have traffic counters that we place at the state lines on I-75 and 95 and a few other strategic locations. So traffic ops helps kind of interpret that data and, you know, the peak flows and all this kind of stuff kind of helps us make those decisions. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, people are evacuating into Florida, into Georgia, and that creates a challenge for us because we've got crews headed the opposite way that need hotels, and all the people in Florida are theoretically coming up here taking up the hotel. So that presents a challenge in itself of trying to get ahead of them in evacuation. But, yeah, we're constantly in coordination with Florida and even surrounding states, their emergency managers for the state.
And let's answer this question so everyone knows for once and for all. In what situations do we contraflow I-16? Well, everyone, the hurricane could be hitting Metro Atlanta, and people are asking are we all going to contraflow I-16? What are you going to do with contraflow I-16? It's a production. It is something we don't take lightly. So, what are the scenarios that we do that?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people think that the DOT emergency management makes that decision, and that's completely opposite from the truth. The local counties and EMA directors down there work closely with GEMA, but the county is the one who gives the evacuation order. So they coordinate, the county EMA directors coordinate with GEMA and us and even the governor, and ultimately that decision is a collaborative decision between them, and the governor will let us know, hey, we want to do contraflow, and then that's when we begin installing everything and 48 hours, or installing it prior so that they can begin evacuation about 48 hours out.
We're talking about Helene because it is the anniversary, but we're also educating about hurricane preparedness. So, Will, what type of communication tools did you find most effective? And 4 months in, I'm sure you were trying a lot of things to really reach out to constituency in your area to let them know what was happening.
Well, I've got to be honest, I wasn't thinking about communications at the time when Hurricane Helene was impacting me. I was in Augusta riding that thing out, and Augusta pretty much got the worst of it in, you know, the area. It had wind gusts, I believe, up to 100 miles per hour. We were getting that eastern eye wall, and I remember waking up at 4 a.m., and the winds are howling outside. It's pitch black, dark, power is out. You can't see anything. And like every couple minutes, you're hearing these loud boom. And another few minutes later, boom, trees are falling every few minutes. And at that moment, you're thinking, is a tree going to come crashing in? I mean, I was spared, fortunately, but there were so many people in the area who weren't lucky like I was. And then you're also thinking, what kind of world am I going to walk out to once this passes? Is my vehicle going to be destroyed? Fortunately, it wasn't. So the storm finally clears around sunrise. I head outside, and I see vehicles okay, but trees are down, kind of blocking me in both directions, so there's nowhere I can go. I'm trying to get a hold of some of our people, open up our cell phone, or my cell phone. There's no cell signal, really. It's very, very difficult to try to get a hold of anybody. And, of course, power's out, Wi-Fi's out. It's just really, really hard to communicate at that point.
And that's across all the district and a lot of South Georgia. And you bring up a great point, which is the staff, the crews that we have working in these emergency situations. They live in these areas. They have families at home. Some of them are at home waiting for dispatch to where they're going. Some of them are in hotels, as we talked about, pre-staging. Matt, how do we manage people working in emergency scenarios when they have emergencies going on at home? You know, they're worried about their families. They may not, you know, the amount of trees that were down, to Will's point, blocked in. You've got some crews that can't get to where they're going. You've got some crews away from home where they've got emergencies at home. How does that play into what the average GDOT employee is dealing with and how we manage that during these emergency situations?
Yeah, so that really ultimately is left up to each district. They will work with their crews. They know where their people live. They know, the best way to handle that. So that's a lot of times that's left up to the districts, but they will. And I've heard stories. They, you know, let their people, if they live on the coast and are going to get impacted, they try to give them enough time to board their houses up, you know, get their family inland, whatever they need to do before they report for assignment. But yeah, they're given the opportunity to take care of themselves first, because, you know, our employees are our greatest asset.
And the mental load of doing the job while worrying. We are all people too. Our crews are people who are living the same experience. We are not, you know, separate from the impacts to our state. So it's really important that we know. I know, especially, you know, when people want to complain about how fast we can clear trees out of the road or how fast we can brine and salt roads. We're just people working these events too. A really dedicated crews who step away. And so, you know, major shout out to our crews, especially in this case, because there were trees everywhere. Roads were blocked. How did we prioritize what we were clearing first?
Yeah, so an overarching answer is our hurricane plan identifies our critical routes, you know, our interstates and things like that. But, depending on the hurricane and where the damage occurs, that some of that can get altered. But mainly the main reentry routes we have identified in our plans, and we try to clear those first. And that's so first responders, ambulances, fire trucks, things like that can get down there and assist those people.
But with no cell service, how did people know where to go and what to do? You know, Will, you talked about not having cell service. So we're assuming all employees at this time in this area did not have a direct link to their supervisor's office. How do they know where to go? How do they know what to do? How did y'all work through that, Will?
Well, just about everybody in the district is going through the same situation I'm going through. You can't communicate with anybody. There are trees blocking you in. Fortunately, a lot of our maintenance folks had chainsaws on hand. And, I mean, you mentioned the family impact. Their family has no power. The food's going bad, but they just know it's their duty to go out there, clear the roads. And they're literally taking these chainsaws, clearing a path. I had one guy tell me he had to cut 14 trees to find a path to I-20. But they know that the interstates are the critical routes. That's where they went first. And I-16, I-20 were covered with trees. But you had people out there that morning cutting trees and working to get those interstates cleared. And eventually, everyone met up.
So he's cutting 14 trees just to get to work, to do the work, to cut more trees.
That's right.
Right. I know that trees were the biggest thing here, and debris, because we had, you know, the stats of football fields wide and high of debris that we were clearing for months and months after. But on day two, we took to the air to figure it out. So your crews, Matt, are riding with, or were you up in the air, or who was up, who's up in the air getting the eagle eye view of really what we're dealing with?
Yeah. So when it's, like you said, when it's widespread like Helene, you need to have a high level view of that. And so we work closely with, State Patrol at GEMA and the State Operations Center. And we get either myself or her, or most of the times at least somebody from the local district, we're able to get them helicopter rides to survey the damage in their local district. So I think four and two in this case ended up getting up in a helicopter so they can survey from a wide spectrum and see where they needed to focus their efforts at.
Will, how did District 2 take to the air?
So That was coordinated again with Georgia State Patrol, like you mentioned. We had our district maintenance manager and district construction manager. First thing that Saturday morning, day two, got up in the air, and they spent about 8 hours just riding every route on the eastern side of the district. And when I say riding the routes, like they meant it, they were going about 300 feet up in the air, just following every single state route, just trying to figure out which routes got impacted the most. And that really helped them form a plan of attack going forward.
So it took us months and months to clear, you know, we talk about the debris getting through the communities to let them know that we're hauling debris and hauling debris. How long did it take us? As we're celebrating a year, we just closed out some of the debris hauling just months ago. This was a multi seasonal effort on top of everything else we did. We don't stop to just do this for a year. How does it play into the fatigue level of having employees months into this still clearing while they have other maintenance things? We have other seasons come upon us. How do we keep employees sort of moving forward when we have this seemingly at the time insurmountable obstacle in front of us?
I guess a couple of things to answer that question. One is that, you know, the local districts don't always send everybody. You know, they have the strike teams identified and leave a few back to do other things and take care of stuff. But you're right, it's a mental game after a while. You've been out there for a week, you take a week off or a few days off, and then you come back and then you go a week. So we try to utilize the other districts that weren't affected to come down and help relieve those crews whenever possible, because, yeah, I've been there, and same goes for our group.
Will, your boots on the ground in District 2, so you see firsthand now, and I will die on this hill that GDOT employees are relentless and they are scrappy and they do the work round the clock. We've got shifts going on. We are a strong agency as far as the ability to grind through some of this. Will, what did you see from your district sort of as on the ground response?
Well, you know, I worked about 3 weeks straight before I had a day without doing anything GDOT. So it was a lot. I put in some long hours, but it's nothing compared to the guys who are out in it working those 12 plus hour shifts. And keep this in mind too, the power is out. Maybe the water's out in some situations too. These guys are working out in it. They don't get to go home and have a shower at the end of the day. It was just rough, but they kept getting back up day after day. They knew this is what they have to do to take care of their fellow Georgians. But yeah, it was a major, major grind.
What tools did y'all use to finally get communication sort of back online?
Okay, so I tried some little workarounds. I'll say day number two, Saturday, I ventured out to the Augusta area office. It powers out there. There's really nothing I can do. Trees are, you know, kind of blocking access in some points as well. So I, my girlfriend's workplace was actually having power. It was one of the few places that had power at the time. There was like a area downtown Augusta that had underground power. So I went there and set up shop, and I was able to like get a little communication with some of our district maintenance folks, and I was getting a better picture by that Saturday of the extent of the damage, which roads are closed, how many signals are non-operational. And I just spent that day number two just trying to get a press release out that day. Finally starting to come back online again, getting a better picture. And I also think that helicopter ride they took that day really helped inform me as well, because, again, that Friday they were in the dark. That means I was in the dark too about just how bad it was in District 2.
One thing that keeps us as an agency that is ahead of the curve is our ability to be nimble after these emergency situations to change and grow the plan, that we're not stuck in a, well, this is the plan. In this case, no communication. What were the conversations afterwards to ensure that we are moving in a place where if this happens again, we have better options for communication when everything's down?
Yeah, so as soon as we can after a major event like this, we have an after action report with all the districts, all the other offices. And so exactly what you said, one of the things that continues to come out is better and improved communications. In this case, it was pretty severe. I don't think I've seen it that bad since Hurricane Michael and Tifton, as far as, you know, the non-communication, being able to get a hold of people in the district. And so we have sat phones. We've got purchased a lot of Starlinks recently, as well as we have our Southern Link radios that we can use too. And those aren't always reliable, but that's what we got. But we're continuing to work with our communications office, IT, to develop those tools so that we can communicate better going forward.
And also, you know, we talk about trees and debris, but from my understanding, some of the other major things we were dealing with was the sheer volume of signs that needed to be replaced, the sheer volume of signals that had to be replaced, that a lot of our signs come from the sign shop, in the Metro sign shop, and signals having to send a lot of those down from different areas of the state just because of the volume that had to be replaced. Every district doesn't have that much just sitting around. So my understanding is that there have been some changes to how we are pre-staging things like signs, things like signals in these areas. Is that something that came out of the debris from Helene?
Yes, it was. One of the after-action comments was, you know, where can we stage more signal equipment? And, hey, we're going to buy more signal equipment in case we need it, because it was evident pretty quick. I mean, there's a lot of components that go into putting a signal back up, and you can imagine a district might have enough for one or two of those. And so, yes, we've been in discussions with traffic operations in the districts to identify those places where we can have extra signal equipment and things like that in case we need it, and signs as well.
Thousands of signs. And signs and signals create safety on the roadway. So even when all the trees are cleared months later, if you don't have the signs and the signals that are there to keep, you know, order on the road, keep that are there for safety, then, you know, we're still one step back. And so it's important to make sure that we sort of learn from these experiences. There was, for lack of a better term, chaos during the aftermath of Helene. Will tell us.
Yeah, so just driving around Augusta was insane those really days and maybe even a week afterward. But that first day in particular was rough. Pretty much every signal in the metro area was out because of power loss. And we had hundreds of signal heads damaged just in Richmond County, which is the county Augusta is in alone. I tried telling people before the storm, treat it like a four-way stop. I guess not enough people got the message, because when I finally ventured out that Friday afternoon, just chaos. People were blowing straight through those signals. And my instinct was, I need to make a video telling people, hey, this is not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to come to a stop. And it got like 10,000 views. Hopefully enough people saw it, but it was still pretty chaotic. People weren't getting the message. And eventually we did do something to try to stop that. A few days later, we made temporary stop signs. We put stop signs on some orange construction barrels, put them out at all the intersections that were still non-operational, and that really helped as well.
We seem to, whether it's a winter weather scenario or a hurricane scenario, we seem to always have people who want to like get out on the roads and just see what happened. And in a case where you don't have signals and you don't have signage, the dangers increase dramatically for motorists. We'll talk specifically to people. This is your moment. Talk specifically to people who want to get out and drive around after these emergency scenarios.
I don't know why. Well, I've got a theory why. It's because people weren't prepared for the brunt of the impact, so they might not have had their food that they needed. So that's a lesson in preparation. Prepare like there could be a hurricane coming. You just never know.
Okay, wait. Stop there. How do I prepare? I don't know. How do I prepare, Will?
I would say just always have an emergency kit, right? Have some non-perishable food, have your batteries, flashlights, definitely multiple days worth of water. People weren't prepared for that though, and they were trying to go to the few stores that were open to get those supplies. So that might have been a reason why they were out on the roads. But if you're just going out just to look, what's the point of that? I mean, It's like driving in a maze with all these trees down. You're driving in a maze and you keep running into dead ends and you have to turn around and go back the other way. I mean, what's the point?
Becomes problematic for our crews.
That does become problematic, yeah.
And dangerous. We're talking down power lines. Most of them were dead at that point, but you never know. We've got down power lines. We have seen in other states, luckily we have not seen this to the level of impact in Georgia, but let's think back to North Carolina and eastern Tennessee that saw roads just crumbling under the sort of the saturation of the flooding that hurricanes brought. When you get out and about after a hurricane, you don't know the conditions of the roads. What are some of the things that we see, trees aside, but Matt, what are some of the things that motorists could encounter on roads that make for very dangerous situations?
Yeah, so you mentioned the flooding. It's not so much the flooding in Georgia, but the amount of rainfall that is dumped in there. It can cause flooding, but what it typically does is ends up washing out pipes under the roadway, things like that. And a lot of times you can't always see that from the surface. And so if motorists get out, they could drive over a roadway surface that there's nothing underneath it and fall, you know, it could cause it to collapse. So, and there's other places where, you know, it just completely washed the road out to begin with, and it's obvious. But yeah, it's very dangerous for people to get out and sightsee after an event like that.
Yeah, and I saw a spot like that, actually, one of our roads, State Route 296. The road, it looks just fine, except for all the trees and the power lines down, but you go look under the road, and the pipe is, like, completely washed out. If you drove over that, you're going to fall in, so there's lots of hazards out there.
Bridges. We have ample amount of bridges throughout the state, especially in South Georgia. It takes time for our bridge inspectors to work through inspecting through the areas that are impacted. We don't want motorists to find bridges that have been negatively impacted before our crews. So again, just a safety message. We talk about turn around, don't drown is a big message because very little water can carry your vehicle away, but also allow us the time we need to inspect infrastructure. It takes time following these storms, whether it's winter or hurricane. I think when the sun is out, people think the storm is over. That the work just begins for our crews. And Will, I know you had many districts join you in District 2 following the storm. So give a shout out to all the help y'all got.
Yeah, thank you to everyone from GDOT who helped us out. We really needed all those reinforcements just because of the major undertaking it was. I think back to Augusta and all the signals that were damaged. You're talking more than 100 intersections, about 300 signal heads damaged. We actually helped out Richmond County to fix all those traffic signal heads. We got it done in about 10 days. What we did, we had some people on a different crew. They had nothing to do with signals. We trained them how to build signal heads, and that freed up a lot of our signal technicians to be out in the field hanging new signals. And they were just working nonstop between our crews, and I think we had four other districts helping us out and some contractors as well to fix about 300 signal heads in 10 days. That's a heck of an effort.
Do you have any numbers on signs that were replaced in your district?
Well, I remember they said about 20% of the red series signs, those are your stop, yield, your really important signs, about 20% of those were damaged. I feel like we got lucky in that respect because with as intense as the winds were, it could have been so much worse. That was still a lot of signs to replace.
So we are a little over halfway through hurricane season this year. And we are, I know we stand ready. Your crews stand ready. And we are hopeful that we will just be learning this year, that we will just, be preparing for the next year's hurricane, season. So we'll work through that. If you need to learn any more information about GDOT, how we deal with hurricanes, how we prepare with hurricanes, how we stay safe during hurricanes, we encourage you to visit our hurricane information page. That's www.dot.gov/hurricane. Will and Matt, thank you so much for being here today. I hope people really take this information to heart that hurricanes can really impact anywhere in Georgia. We've seen hurricanes impact North Georgia, South Georgia. It is a statewide effort. It is not just coastal Georgia, and we saw that with, you know, Helene decided where she wanted to impact, and that was District 2. Will, I know you've learned a lot since then. Matt, I know your crews continue to grow and to strive to make a better plan for next time. We're always learning, always growing at GDOT, so thanks for being here.
Yep, mm-hmm. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Hurricane season, we hope it comes and goes as we prepare for winter weather here in Georgia. But join us next time on Ahead of the Curve as we talk about more people and projects that keep Georgia DOT one of the best in the nation. I'm Natalie Dale. We look forward to talking to you next time.